pleasure begets pleasure. If I do something out of pleasure, I couldn't stand. All right, this is the real truth, but I'm a university professor. I'm fed up with it. Okay. I got fed up with it in 2014. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started opening a channel on YouTube. I opened my company. I want to have fun. Please, God, give me fun. And I started, and I really did have fun. And it brought me so much pleasure. And the pleasure worked up into different things that I was enjoying so much. And it came out of something so negative when I almost thought I had to go for, had serious anger issues. I would start screaming at everyone in my university. But then as soon as I started doing something that I really liked, my job at the university changed, you know, magically, because I was seeing things in a different way and I would do things totally in a different way. Yeah.
That shit is gross.
That shit is gross. Greetings, starseeds, and welcome to A Cosmic Journey,
the comedy podcast about science and spirituality, where we discuss everything in the universe from the physical
to the metaphysical. I'm Demi Wilde.
And I am Jay Maceo. This week, we've got cosmic news stories like how a recent discovery in China may be linked to our long lost human ancestors.
Or how the apartment building that collapsed in Florida this past week may have been sinking for years.
Mm-hmm. And on our YouTube channel Monday, you can catch cosmic news in video format. And on Wednesday, you can catch my Cosmic Insights, where I'll be talking about dealing with negative thoughts and emotions. So be sure to subscribe.
Do that. Also, later on in the show, we take a deep dive into a black hole.
Splash.
To get metaphysical with our guest professor, author, and psychic medium, Claudia Monticelli.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
How's this week been for you?
This week has been good. What did I do? I felt like I took it easy this week a little bit. I've been, so we were going to talk about me having a show. You talked about it last week. I'm going to be streaming it on Instagram too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to stream it on Instagram so you can catch it on Wednesday, 7/7. At 7 Pacific time. So that would be 8 Mountain, 9 Central,
mm-hmm.
10 Eastern. Anyhow, I have a show, so I've been practicing over and over and over again for that show.
Nice. That's exciting. My week's been pretty low key. I've kind of like just kind of been at home. I've been trying to experiment a little bit with social media a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. I've been using Canva to kind of like create these new Insta stories or reels and stuff for the show.
Mm-hmm.
So you pointed out that I messed up on the episode.
I only knew that because I was showing somebody this thing. I was showing somebody our show.
Yeah.
I've like shown a couple of people our show this week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was like, crap. Like, because I put episode 36 instead of 37, and I was like, God damn it.
And I knew it because I had just showed somebody. I was like, click on episode 37. So I was like, one of us is wrong.
When I point things out, or when I find stuff like that I mess up, like that Virgo in me just goes like, oh, why did I do that? You know? Like,
yeah. No, yeah,
that,
yeah.
That detail work.
Detail.
I've been watching a new show though, on HBO called Generation.
Have I heard about this? What is it about?
It's a bunch of like Gen Zers, but they're like all in high school. They all are like having sex and they're all kind of like dating and they're all kind of like bisexual or gay.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some straight guys too. But it's very interesting that Justice Smith is in it. Have you heard of Justice Smith?
Sounds familiar.
He was in the Pokemon movie. I never watched it. Yeah, he was, he did that live action Pokemon movie not that long ago.
There was a live action Pokemon movie?
There was a live action Pokemon movie. The Pokemon looked really weird.
Oh my.
The Pokemon looked really weird. But yeah, he was in it, and he played like he's gay. He's a gay actor, but he plays this like very openly queer high schooler, mm-hmm. and kind of like he's like star of the water polo team and all this stuff. So like, I wish I was him in high school. Mm-hmm. He's like the person that I wish I could have been in high school.
Like out, but like still like out, popular,
but still popular. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like yeah. Everyone loves him. Like one of the days, like he keeps getting dress coded mm-hmm. for wearing just like flamboyant stuff, or, like crop tops and things. And he one day like he like just took off his shirt and just like started waving it around and stuff. And then later on in the season, he was like really depressed after something happened, and all the other kids like tried to make him feel better by taking off their shirts, like shirts off for Chester, shirts off for Chester. Like, wow. I'm like, oh,
that is, you know, Gen Z is like that. I almost, part of me is jealous. Part of me is like right on. Another part of me is jealous. Like, you know, like
yeah.
What I think if like, if I came out super early, like what would I have done? I saw Fright. Oh, I keep forgetting. Fear Street, part one, 1994 last night. Yeah, and just a small spoiler alert, there is some LGBT in that. I won't say where, but there definitely is. I liked it. I watched it yesterday, last night.
Fright Night. Isn't that based on, what is it based on?
Not Fright Night. This is Fear.
Fear Street.
Fear Street.
Goosebumps?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I didn't know it was based on anything.
I feel like that's a book.
Oh. I don't know. And Fright Night is probably based on something, but
I don't know.
Fear Street. That was Fright Night was like when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But Fear Street. Yeah, it was good. They said part one. So they're gearing up for part two already. Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm. They sure is. So to talk about this week. So we talked about last week how yeah. I got Grindr.
Yeah.
We talked about that. You know what? Everybody was telling me if I got that,
mm-hmm.
that I'd be just, it would be just like the scummiest, worst people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I actually made a new friend, like a platonic friend.
Yeah.
We like hung out. We went to go eat. It was like, I like your energy. He's like, I like your energy too. We went out and we went to go eat. We went to a park. We just like ripped off each other for a whole bunch of stuff. No sexy stuff. No, yeah. No. And it was kind of, it was really cool. I think we're going to be workout buddies now.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was really cool. And I went on a couple of dates this weekend.
Yay.
Yeah.
I actually made a new friend too. It's a platonic friend, via Grindr. He's straight, but questioning.
Okay. That's what they say.
And we ended up like, he came over and we were just like kind of smoking weed and talking until like fucking 3 a.m. and
wow,
hanging out. And you know, he's really good, really cool guy. We were talking a lot about like etymology and symbolism and like a lot of like esoteric stuff. So he knew a lot about like astrology and tarot and numerology and stuff too. So we just were like talking until like 3 a.m. But yeah, he was really cool too. So
nice.
I mean, it is possible to make platonic friends off there, but it's, I've had a very difficult experience myself, and I know a lot of other people have as well. I'm happy that you're having a good experience on there.
Yeah. I hope I deleted soon. I mean, I did have one date from Hinge.
Yeah.
Guy turned out to be very awesome. It was apparent that it was just a friendship vibe.
Yeah.
I think I know I felt that. And he said, you know, that he felt it too. When I was like, hey, you're awesome. But I didn't say, but I was like, you're awesome. I had a very fun time. Feels like a friendship vibe. I'd love to hang out again. And he's like, sure thing. I feel the same way. So that was good. And I had another date, and I'm not going to talk about, you know, that just feels good. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
can we also talk about the glitter action that's going on in your eyes right now?
So if you can see, yeah, I did. I'm just trying new things. I'm mixing my masculine with my feminine.
Yeah.
I have a little eyeshadow going on, just a little bit of a.
Our video watchers will see it very.
Yeah.
The little slight tinge of color right there.
Yes. It, in case it looks horrible, Demi did not give me a black eye.
No.
Make me a sandwich. No, that didn't happen.
That didn't happen. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. That's pretty much been my week.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. I went, I did go to Palm Springs last weekend.
All right, you did.
And we, on the way back, my buddy and I that went, we mentioned him before, Stone Street. He was a guest on the show. We're going back And all of a sudden his car starts making noise and everything. So anyhow, long story short, we ended up spending an extra night there, mm-hmm. but that was, you know, it was cool, but I had fun. It was 116 degrees.
Ugh.
Yeah.
But it's always a dry heat out there. So it's like,
I didn't mind it.
It never bothers me.
Yeah. I didn't mind it, but I was just like looking at it and being 116. The thing is that you don't want to accidentally, because I went to a pool party. Mm-hmm. You don't want to step on the concrete without shoes. And I did that over and over again. That's when it bothered me.
Yeah, totally. You have to have flip-flops at least.
Flip-flops.
Well, I did visit my mom on Sunday and in Riverside, she's kind of staying out there while she's finding a place. And she's actually looking for a place in Palm Springs right now too. Also shout out CJ, our previous guest, episode 16, I believe. I just listened to Hella Ross pod. He got a place out there too.
Nice.
So we might be, I may be hanging out there quite nice. A bit with my mom and anyways. So congrats, CJ. And then hopefully my mom will be out there soon, too.
Nice. Yeah.
Shall we get into some astrology?
Let's do that. Do that.
So this is the forecast for 7/5 to 7/11. 7/11. Mm. July 4th through 5th. So we have a couple different aspects here that are going to be kind of interesting. So we have a sun sextile Uranus and a square Chiron. So our overall sense of ourselves may be due for some change at this point. So Uranus and Chiron are here to help. The sun will be forming a hard square to Chiron, our wounded healer, on 7/4 on July 4th, meaning we have some work to do on ourselves, which on an intrinsic level, which will ultimately lead to great healing.
Hmm. Do you say Uranus just so I don't make a Uranus joke?
Well, I've kind of adopted this Uranus because previously I keep changing the pronunciation of it.
I know. I was waiting for that because you said last week you said Uranus and then Uranus
and then Uranus. Did you say all three?
Oh, okay.
I'm like trying to just Uranus is fine with me.
My cousin Uranus.
Uranus is fine with me too.
She's so, a top man.
Exactly. So this is enhanced by a very next day where Uranus is the planet of rebellion and upheaval, and it will be forming a harmonic sextile with the sun, our life giver. So the energy of these couple of days brings great need for change, for healing, and for enhances the possibilities of actually doing that work. So on July 4th, we're actually having kind of a hard aspect of like change and healing versus the next day where we actually have an easier transition with ourselves and kind of like this rebellious nature of ourselves too.
See, I was, as you know, I was trying to find another pool party to go to, but do you think that means, you know, with what's going on July 4th, that maybe I should like stay and be like alone or something?
No, I mean, it really just
and I ain't trying to have any conflict.
No, it just brings out the opportunity for us to actually do some deep healing. So if you're method of deep healing is being with friends and learning from them and being around energy like that, that's great too. Mm-hmm. If your healing has to do with like being at home and being to yourself and doing your thing, that's fine too. It just brings out that energy of healing that it needs necessary. So the hard aspect, however, is a little bit tricky. So it could lead to some problems, but you know, overall it's going to be good for us because the following day we have a harmonious aspect with Uranus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Blackout curtain day.
It's the hide in your cave day.
Right.
On 7/10, we have a new moon. So every new moon, it's new moon in Cancer. So every new moon begins a new cycle of beginnings and grants us the cosmic clean slate to work with. New moons are also time to take some quiet introspection and journal out your thoughts and ideas, planting new seeds and of new growth, both internally and externally. Cancer, the hermit crab, has a hard shell which hides its very soft and emotional center, protecting it from harm. This is the optimal time for some emotional digging, whether taking that energy and moving it towards a new goal or creating something new with it. Harness your emotions and try not to be so hard on the outside.
Like a jawbreaker.
Exactly. Did I only do three this week? I guess I only did three this week. Anywho, 7/11, Mercury enters Cancer. On 7/11, Mercury also I will be entering the sign of the hermit crab. So Mercury is a planet of communication, expression, intellect, and learning, while Cancer is that hard shell with the gooey center. So with Mercury in Cancer, our emotions will play a vital role in our expression and learning. Whether you're an artist, a writer, a student, or a doctor, working with Cancerian energy brings our inner emotions onto the playing field. So find a way to healthily express the things that come out for you. That way you don't accidentally take it out on others.
Ooh, okay.
Yep. So a lot of Cancer energy. I mean, it's Cancer season right now too. So we're all kind of like feeling that emotional vibe. It's just being aware of it and not letting our, not letting our emotions hide. So being aware of them and letting and expressing them healthily is a good thing.
Be healthy.
Yeah.
Be a healthy snack.
We're going to do a little tarot reading for the week.
Tara, what you doing, Tara?
Come on, Tara. Come on, Tara. Okay, let's see here. Ooh, hello. Two. Boom. All right, we've got the two of discs. Ooh. We've got the two of discs. We've got the four of wands, completion. And we've got the devil card.
The devil card.
So I think I actually just had two of these cards when I was doing the reading for Dev the other night. So two of pentacles. So we have some, where is this? This is, ooh, those glyphs are, I have no idea what those are. I want to say one's Neptune. So we've got the two of discs, which is kind of like earth energy, but it also brings balance. It also has the number of an eight here. So we've got an infinity symbol. Mm.
Is that an Ouroboros?
Orbis?
Ouroboros, like
the snake? Ouroboros?
Oh, yeah, Ouroboros.
Yeah, so it's essentially...
Ouroboros, what are you doing?
It's essentially an Ouroboros, a snake eating its own tail. So it's... it can be a little tricky to deal with because, you know, we kind of find ourselves in these cycles of habits or whatever we're doing in. So being aware of them and allowing for that balance to take place so that we're not just eating our own tails. We're also just kind of like moving with the energy and allowing what?
I could eat my own tail. I wouldn't leave the house.
Exactly.
I wouldn't need no man.
Exactly. So.
I had to be that guy. I made it juvenile.
But allowing this kind of change to take place so that way we're not eating our own tail or like forcing these cyclical patterns. However, it also has that earth energy. So it's the physical stuff that's around us. It's whether it be like your house, your living situation, your friends, your family, like it's your abundant physical nature. Or even your health. Four of wands, completion. Wands is action. Four is foundations and balance. So this is actually Venus in Aries. So we've got the Venus, love, money, art. I can't talk. But you also have that planet of action, of emergence. So we have... balance here. We have foundations, creating foundations with our creativity, feeling foundations with our actions, foundations with ourselves, within our love, and our passions. It also kind of has that element of eight because yes, there are four wands, but they're kind of done in a circular pattern here.
Mm.
So we have, oh, look, you can see that weird balance there. So we have like the balance of so another eight. So we have eight also. Mm. Infinity. What else does it mean?
New beginnings.
And then we have the Hollywood card here, the devil.
Hollywood.
I call it the Hollywood card.
Oh, okay.
Because it's creativity, it's action, but it's also like very masculine energy. As you can see, it's a giant penis on this card. But we also have kind of like this kind of
my favorite kind.
Mm-hmm. We also kind of have like this element of like webs behind it too. So like entrapment, narcissism for the goat. He has a third eye. You know,
greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm. So we have all these ideas that are kind of circling around in the testes in a way, and they're waiting to be ejaculated, for lack of a better word.
I was going to say launched, but yeah.
Launched. And
they have numbers in them, or are they all twos? Are those numbers, or what are those writings?
It's, I think they are, yeah.
Twos and then a one right there.
There are numbers. Twos, twos. Yeah. I mean, these cards are loaded with symbolism. So obviously, I don't even catch all of them all at once myself. I find things new all the time with these.
A whole new world.
Exactly. But we also have, oh, that's interesting too.
Oh, there's circles on both. All the cards have circles on them.
I want to say is that Neptune? I'll have to look that up afterwards.
Neptune Jones.
But anyways, we have a lot of change here. We have a lot of like new beginnings, and we have a lot of foundations that are being set in reference to our creativity, to our passions, and to our projects that we're working on. So being aware of those changes, being aware of ourselves, and being aware of what we're doing with our work will lead us to ultimately better circumstances.
Nice. Yeah. Uranus.
Uranus.
We're just going to make all these different pronunciations.
Exactly.
We're going to do one that it doesn't even have the U sound in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Shall we get into some news?
We should. Let's do some news. Not some old, but some news. This is Cosmic News. So, do you remember? I always want to call them WAPs. Do you remember the UAP thing? So the government with that last coronavirus bill, the last stimulus bill, mm-hmm. what was tucked in there we talked about was that the all the heads of government would have to have by this month. Oh, by last month.
Last month, yeah.
Yeah, to lay out everything that they had on UAPs or unidentified aerial phenomenon, also mm-hmm. known as UFOs, unidentified flying objects. Mm-hmm. First, we want to say that, you know, it doesn't, you know, say it.
My NASA shirt.
Oh, NASA, yeah.
NASA.
I thought you were like, that's my titty. my titty shirt.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that is my titty.
But yeah, so they're just saying that these phenomenon or flying objects are unidentified, that mm-hmm. they can't be identified. Not that little green men are in them, but we want to know. So the U.S. government can't explain 143 of the 144 cases of unidentified flying objects reported by military planes. So this is just the ones reported by military planes. And this is according to the highly anticipated intelligence report that was released last week. Now, that report released by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence was meant to shed light on the mystery of those dozens of flying objects spotted from 2004 to this current year. But instead, they didn't have, you know, adequate data. That one UAP, shorthand for, of course, for unidentified aerial phenomena, was large deflating balloon. And the reporter said that others remained classified. So we're not going to hear about those. While the reporter explicitly said that unusual activity had been reported multiple times, it didn't rule out the case that these incidents could be the result of errors or spoofing. I think they're little green men, though. the report does not mention aliens or even vaguely hint at an extraterrestrial explanation for the reported sightings, but makes clear that much of the phenomenon may be beyond the existing means that the government has to identify such objects.
I mean, is this the first that we're hearing about this? Because I don't remember hearing anything last month.
No. So it was, as it said, last Friday. So I don't know whether that means last Friday, which would have been the 25th, or whether they meant the 18th, because I'm trying to remember. They might have meant by the 25th.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was by the 25th, which was 8 days ago as we record this.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, I haven't really heard much because I thought that was supposed to be, the end of May, truthfully.
Oh, no, it was supposed to be
like beginning of June.
Yeah.
Now they're kind of like just kind of now trickling out, like all this stuff.
Yeah. Because
maybe we should check the Black Vault.
Black Vault.
Check the Black Vault.
Why it's got to be a Black Vault, man.
So there is you have an Alexa and a Google house thing. I don't trust these things. I think they freak me out. I think the government is spying on me every time I use them. I don't know why you have both of them.
I want one in the living room, one in the bedroom, but I don't know why I don't want two of the same ones.
Yeah.
You know what it is? I wanted the contrast because there's certain things I like that she does better. And certain things I like that he does, but I'm saying she and he because I don't want to like trigger either one of them by calling their name. You call one of them, they're like, oh, what's up?
Anyways, so some news about some Alexas here. So we have recently a well-known TikTok creator experienced when his Alexa got a little too real. Uh-oh. So John Buckhouse, who makes videos of himself grilling his Alexa about anything from the zombie apocalypse to King Kong. In one video, he asked, what will happen to Florida in 2025? And its prediction may be hinted at a future ravaged by extreme weather patterns and ultimately global warming.
Oh, no.
Alexa thinks that there may be some serious trouble in the paradise for the southernmost eastern state. Floridians may want to prepare for some seriously harrowing weather because on September 4th, 2025 at 3:08 p.m., Florida will hit a Category 5 hurricane with winds as high as 205 miles per hour. Miami will be completely destroyed, it said.
Wow.
So that's a little weird, but not only that, there's another weird thing that happened with him. With another video uploaded shows John Buckhouse asking what happens to California in 2025.
We talked about this one, right? Okay.
So I don't know if we showed it on the show, but I definitely showed you this.
Yeah.
But Alexa responds, on August 4th, 2025 at 3:05 p.m., California will be hit by a magnitude 9.6 earthquake when the San Andreas Fault shifts. What is going on with Alexa?
I don't know. I hope she's a false prophet.
I mean, there's not only that, but like there's many other videos of him and other people asking Alexa weird things like this that show the AI is kind of like, I don't know where it's pulling this information from.
Mm-hmm.
I saw another video recently where they ask, hey, Alexa, open your third eye, and then ask them a future question. But she says like, third eye is open. What would you like to know?
Wow.
Have you ever asked yours that?
No. I did ask about the what's going to happen, mm-hmm. and it didn't do any predicting, but maybe I need to ask her to open her third eye.
You guys have an Alexa at home and you experience any of this, please send us a video. We would love to see it.
We would. Speaking of Florida, Florida. So we talked about sinkhole last week, but there's more sinking going on this time in Florida. So a Florida collapsing building. Apparently, it had been sinking for years. Do you hear about the building?
So I was on a date and I stayed the night at his house. Ooh. That night. The next morning, we were watching the news and he was making coffee, and we saw the actual video of that building collapsing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, weird.
Well, it happened on a Thursday, and it was deemed to be sinking a year ago, according to researchers at the Florida International University. The building, which was constructed in 1981, has been sinking at an alarming rate since the 90s, according to a study in 2020 by Shimon Walensky, a professor at the Department of Earth and Environment. Now, when Walensky saw the news that the Chaplain Towers South condominium in Surfside had collapsed, he instantly remembered it from the study. Walensky also said that his research is not meant to suggest certainty about what caused the collapse. The building was sinking at a rate of 2 millimeters a year since the 90s. So it could have slowed down the acceleration since the time. Workers sorted through the rubble Thursday afternoon. An official says 35 people were rescued and confirmed at least one death. We're sorry. They're saying that the death toll is expected to rise. At least 99 people remained unaccounted for. So,
yes, this is like a week ago.
Yeah, I hope some of these people have been found since then.
Yeah. Well, this article was actually just maybe a couple days ago, but when I first was watching it, they were saying 158 people were like unaccounted for in there, but they only found one. So now they've kind of like, now they found, how many did they say, 35? 35 people were rescued and confirmed at least one death. So the one death, fine. But I mean, it's been a week now and there's still many people that haven't been found. And it's very scary and sad. And unfortunately, this could have been avoided. Like there's reports.
Yeah.
There's reports saying that this building was going to collapse and it's sinking into the ground.
Somebody's like, bitch, I told you so.
I know. I mean, this guy.
In that very voice.
This guy, Wodnaski, he's like, yeah, told you so. Anyways, there is some news here about a dragon man.
Oh, dragon man.
Dragon man. So one of the key pieces to the puzzle of our long narrative arc as a human species may have been hiding at the bottom of a well in China for almost a century. Mm. As the story goes that a worker at a bridge construction site in the Chinese city of Harbin dug up a skull in 1933, but hid it in a well to keep it from falling into the hands of the occupying Japanese army. Its existence was only revealed by the worker's family in recent years and donated to the Hebei Geo University for study. Mm. So the Harbin fossil is one of the most complete human cranial fossils in the world, says King Ji, a professor of paleontology of Hebei Geo University and author of a study on the skull. In a statement, this fossil preserved many details that are critical for understanding the evolution of the Homo genus and the origin of the Homo sapiens. So the Harbin cranium is a true big box of skulls for the Homo genus. It's a massive dome with room for modern human brain, but with bigger and somewhat squared off eye sockets, imposing brows, wide mouth, and plus size teeth. So it's kind of got some like big features. It's got a big cranium, big teeth.
Did you say I had imposing brows or they have the opposite of that?
I said you had Cro-Magnon brows.
That is so epped up.
Many men do, and many, it's just, you know, that's a feature of like male people. I do in a way. So when I was doing makeup, you have hooded brows, or you have like hooded eyelids.
Yeah, you can see like many parts of your eyelid.
Many men have like these square bones around their eyebrows. Women have more rounded features. Scientists believe the skull, thought to have come from a male who lived to be about 50 years old and is a specimen of a previously unrecognized human species dubbed Homo Iongi or Dragon Man.
Whoa.
A trio of papers from the researchers was published Friday in the journal called The Innovation that make a provocative suggestion that we are closely related to dragons, or at least a dragon man and dragon woman. So we are actually closely related to this previously undiscovered Homo genus.
Okay.
We didn't even know they existed until just now. They had been very high. At one point, they had actually been walking amongst Homo sapiens too.
Oh, wow.
So it's possible that we even interbred with them.
Wow.
Yeah. Very interesting.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
Wow.
Yeah. So no, I'm just thinking about dragon people. So they didn't breathe fire.
No, so
dragon, it'd be cool if they did.
So I mean, it's a very interesting concept just because I think they called them dragon man because they had such large features. And because it like the teeth and stuff, like big teeth. Cranium and stuff. So I mean, I don't know if they had scales. That'd be kind of cool if they did. But we are closely related to reptiles anyways.
What, we're reptilians?
I mean, humans, yeah.
What?
Yeah, we're very closely related to reptiles and avians for some reason. Pigs.
I'm a reptile bird.
We
kind
of have DNA from like all over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe we're a mix of all of them, man.
I am fully on board with the notion that aliens actually genetically altered us from the Homo whatevers back then to now. Fully on board.
That's what our evolution was.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you never know.
We accelerated.
Well, speaking of new discoveries in the brain, there's a new type of brain signal that was detected.
Ooh.
What? So scientists have discovered a unique form of cell messaging occurring in the human brain that we haven't ever seen before. Now, the discovery hints that our brains may be even more powerful units of computation than we realized before. early last year, 2020, researchers from institutes in Germany and Greece, G&G, responded a mechanism in the brain's outer cortical cells that produces a novel graded signal on all on its own, and one that could be that could provide individual neurons with another way to carry out their logical functions. Now, by measuring the electrical activity in sections of tissue removed during surgery on epileptic patients and analyzing their structure using fluorescent microscopy, the neurologist found individual cells in the cortex used not just the usual sodium ions, but calcium as well. Now, the combination of positively charged ions kicked off waves of voltage that have never been seen before, referred to as calcium mediated dendritic action potentials, or decaps. I like decaps better. I'm going to start saying decaps. That's easier. Brains, especially those of the human variety, are often compared to computers. Both use the power of electrical activity, electrical voltage, to carry out various operations in computers. It's in the form of a rather simple flow of electrons through intersections called transistors. Now, I want to talk about this because I think I was between this article and another one. There is an article that maybe I should bring it up next week, but that the brain now, they found out, can wirelessly, they found the first way for the brain to wirelessly interact with computers. And I think that is like awesome.
What?
And scary. Yeah. What? So maybe we had to talk about that next
Transistor.
I don't know. Did you ever watch Transformers as a kid?
I did, yeah.
They made that noise when they transformed.
It wasn't my thing.
Really?
Yeah, I hated Transformers.
What? Yeah, were you a GoBot person or something?
No, it was more like Ninja Turtles.
Like Ninja Turtles.
Spider-Man.
But Ninja Turtles, but that came after. Like, I'm talking about early Transformers. Like, you know what?
Didn't care for it.
The first movie I cried in the movie theater was the 1986 Transformers movie. Oh, you didn't say you didn't care for it. Transformers had been like, they switched to the new Transformers before you were even born.
Yeah.
Because 86, that's when like Rodimus Prime. I'm starting to sound like a real nerd right here. But that was like the, from the old Transformers to the new Transformers. So yeah, you weren't even around when Transformers was like at its heyday.
No, I wasn't. Wasn't even a speck in my father's eye.
You wouldn't even have thought.
In our final cosmic news story for the week, we have a Maine man. A man in Maine tries
Maine man
tries to pay bail with counterfeit money. A man in Maine tried to post a $200 bail with counterfeit bills, according to the sheriff's office. Deputies responding to a report of a stolen vehicle in Waterboro early Sunday morning stopped a man walking nearby. The New York County Sheriff's Office wrote in a Facebook post, they determined that he was not involved, but arrested him on an outstanding warrant for theft from a Walmart. Who steals from Walmart? I mean, if you're going to steal from someone, steal from Walmart.
Are there any Walmarts around here?
No, thank God.
I think there's one. There might be one. There was one at some point in like near Crenshaw. I don't know if it still exists or not.
I have not seen a Walmart around these parts. There hasn't been a Walmart around these parts for 85 years. I don't know. I've never seen one around here. Thank God, because I hate Walmart. My mom, true story, my mom used to always try to buy me clothes from Walmart. And I would say, Mom, stop buying clothes from Walmart. I hate them. They don't fit right. They're cheap. They're ugly. I hate them. And she would still do it all the time. And I was like, Mom, you really have to stop doing this. And I was just getting so upset. So finally she stopped buying me clothes because I'm a little bit of a fashionista. I'm a little bit of a snob. So when my mom is buying me clothes from Walmart, I say, no, please stop.
You could have made something out of
it. I could have made something out of them. Maybe. Anywho, the man said he had enough money to post his $200 bill. But when the bail commissioner arrived, he tried to pay with two counterfeit $100 bills.
He should have like used one real one.
One real one, one fake one. Mm-hmm. He was denied bail and was returned to jail with an additional charge of forgery. So the man was able to post $100 in bail later in the day, the sheriff's office said. His court date is scheduled for August 4th. So he was able to put, he was able to pay $100 after the fact. Why didn't he just pay the $100 regular?
Right. In August the 4th. Oh, that's, you know, 4 years before this big earthquake. Sorry.
It's true, huh?
That's what Alexa said.
444. Ooh, four for completion. What? Court records do not indicate if the man has an attorney to represent him, and or a working phone number for the man could not be found.
You cannot be found.
Cannot be found at all.
You can't be found.
So as usual, you can find all the links to these articles on our show notes on our website at acosmicjourneypod.com. Mm-hmm. If you're watching us on YouTube, thanks to you for tuning in. Be sure to like and subscribe to these videos for more. And subscribe for every week.
Yeah. And if you're listening to the podcast, stay tuned because we are going to be joined by our guest, Claudia Monticelli.
See ya.
Peace.
That was a weird ending.
That was weird. We're weird.
100%. Well, welcome to the show, Starseeds. This is Dr. Claudia Monticelli, PhD. She is a professor, author, psychic medium, a past life regressionist, clinical hypnotherapist, Feldenkrais. Did I say that right?
Feldenkrais
practitioner. And Argentine tango dancer. That's quite the bio there.
What? That's impressive. You did that well in a mouthful. I like that. With only two breaths.
I know. Feldenkrais.
Nobody knows what that is. Very few.
We will people. Get into that. I did all have right. a lot of questions, but Well, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm so sorry Jay won't be here. I was hoping to see you both, but that's okay.
Things happened. He's in Palm Springs having a wonderful time. Yeah. So
thank goodness for him.
I know. Well, we're just going to jump right into it. So,
okay.
I don't know if you've ever like seen the interviews that we have on YouTube, yes. but you have, yes, okay, cool. So you kind of are familiar with the format.
Yes, yeah, sure.
Cool.
Sure,
all right.
Sure. Well even if I'm not, I mean, you can surprise me. I'll be all right with that.
Oh, we can get off the rails. We can go off.
Okay,
the rails.
Good.
That's it's going to happen already.
Good boy. I'm ready.
Just from what we were talking about earlier. Like, yeah, for sure. Well, let's start with your early life. So how and where did you grow up?
Okay, that's a good question, actually. I don't mean that in an ironic way. All right, so I come from two Italian parents. Mm-hmm. And even if I don't look like everybody thinks I'm Swiss or American, really, I was 6 months old when my parents decided to immigrate to the United States. And I literally came off the boat. And I think it was the last boat that trip that I did. So I grew up in the United States. My sisters and I speaking English among ourselves and my parents speaking Italian to us. So I had a passive knowledge of the Italian. And so it was sort of, you know, this little generation detachment between parents and children. And we grew up in a time, you know, it was the 60s, 70s, and money grew on trees, literally, you know, and there were jobs for everybody. And I could remember at 13, I wore my mother's cardigan over my shoulders, and I went door to door as an Avon lady. Right. I think people would buy something just because they felt bad for me.
Yeah,
but then suburban life. I grew up in the city, northern New Jersey, Paterson, New Jersey. Really rough, you know, all different kinds of ethnic groups. And us little girls, 5, 6, 7, 10, you know, really in the mix. It was just our first encounter with a really mixed ethnic context. And then suburbia, the United States of America. Yeah. And that was a slow death. So then I went
for most people, I think.
Yeah, it is. And well, it was always the East Coast. It was always, you know, industrial, industrial, industrial. But New Jersey is the Garden State. And for work, I went into the city and I stayed in the city. I lived in the city in different boroughs 7 or 8 years. And so I did most of my major schooling, the first, you know, part of it, the university and all that. And then the other half of my life, I moved to Italy because of just life happens. You know, you meet someone, you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And you think, ah, well, let's see which would be best, you know? Mm-hmm. And so then I'm now living in Italy, but I travel back to and fro because I have a sister in the States as still. And I like my companies in the States. I, you know, have to pay taxes there. So I might as well just go there, see my old high school friends, you know?
Right.
And so that's that. And when I started working as a conference interpreter, I was, I worked for the United States Department, State Department. And so I traveled a lot. I traveled around the United States, and that really ate into me because, you know, you have a house in the city and you get a job, you get an assignment, and they ship you off for 30 days and you don't know where you're going to go. Yeah, never home. So you don't have your friends and your lover is there and the other, and then they're not there when you come back, you know? Mm-hmm. So that then led me into the trap of wanting something more stable. And then I, you know, went back. And love is just a funny thing, what it does to you. Makes you make decisions when you're not ready sometimes.
I find it interesting that you said trap in reference yeah. to a relationship. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because when you travel, well, let's say I make it sound negative, but when you have a high powered job, and that really was a high powered job because you are their voice and you have to know what you're doing. So
exactly.
it's not glorified travel. I mean, we were in hotels and I would study. You have to study. You're talking to tax experts. You're talking to art, everything. You're talking to journalists.
You've got to be a jack of all trades.
Yeah, right. And plus you have to know what to pack because you never know. And I never got San Francisco right. Every time I went to San Francisco, I was always so cold and have to go and get some clothes to wear. But so that is, it's sort of deceiving, the idea of traveling and having the good life. But you never, you're alone. So most of the time you're alone. And when I say trap, it's a moment of weakness that you think, oh my God, I can't do it alone. Mm-hmm. When now I think, my God, it's a luxury. It is a luxury to keep your space. And, you know, that I guess you change the way you look at things as time right. goes by. And
well, if you're in it, it's really difficult to see like outside of it.
Yes.
So
Yeah, exactly. But you know, you open your door and your relationship comes into the door, and then the door closes, and then the door. Over the years, I used to think, well, how big does a house have to be for me to be with my companion? How many bathrooms? Mm-hmm. How many bedrooms? You know, and the house never seemed big enough in my mind. But aside from the joking, relationships is what life is all about. I mean, any kind, business, friends, family, everything is based on relationships. And that's a big part of what I do. It's a big mm-hmm. part of my work always, you know, starting from the interpreting, you have to know, because knowing the two languages or three or four, whatever you have, is the easy part. And the hard part is the social grace of sitting next to someone who just doesn't know what he's talking about or she's talking about, and you have to say what they say or give the illusion that you're saying exactly what they're saying, you know, right. or cover for their lack of social graces when they criticize the person in front of them. And I, you know, can't do that. And so it's interesting. And, but it's stressful, you know? So when you retire into the space, you don't want to, when there's a high powered event, say you're a conference organizer or an event organizing fashion designer event, you know, it takes months and months and months to get underway. When it's finally over, the fashion week is over, you've got, the first thing you do at the very least is get stone drunk and just, you know, for an entire day, at least one.
Yeah.
Because then you have that post excitement syndrome, you know, the high goes down, you know, it's a very low, but it's exciting. And after many years, you get used to it. You get used to it, not in a bad way. You get used to putting up your boundaries and saving yourself a little more, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. When did you realize you were intuitive?
That's another good question. You're good. I have to say that it's very clear. It was just as I could see myself as if it were now, yesterday. I was in church, Catholic church. I was baptized. My parents baptized me into this Roman Catholic church. And I was really young because I was still holding my father's hand. And I had my younger sister, who's smaller than me, on the other side of my father. And I could have been five. And all of that was the first sign, because I started seeing all spirits. It seemed like they were fornicating. I mean, it seems like they were playing you all over. But and so afterwards, I thought, ghost, no, they're sex. Doing more than playing. Yeah, ghost sex. And that was the first thing. And then my dad, you know, pulled my hand and said, what are you doing? You know, wait, are you okay? Are you okay? And I said, oh yeah. And so that was the very first. And it did occur when there were moments when I was in a church setting alone, say an afternoon when the crazy things that we used to do, take confession or help, I don't know who or what. And everything was so, so quiet. And when you go in these places, that's the beauty of these places, because it's, if you want to sit and meditate or just sit and not hear anything, that's the time to go when there's nobody there. And that's when I would see playing out before my eyes, like as if it were on a stage, a scene between different figures. You know, once it was a very old lady coming across the scene. And afterwards, I started writing poetry based on what I used to see, short things. I mean, short things. This was 10 years old, 11 years old, one line, two line, shadow, outline poems that took the words took the shape of what I was seeing, you know? Wow. And the psychic part of it came after a few times. It happened about twice, where I literally just fainted. And I was in a church setting. Once it was twice actually in the church setting when I was falling and somebody had to pick me up. And there too was really, really, really young. Then when I was a little older and I wasn't in a church setting and I was highly concentrated on something, I don't know, it was some kind of exam somewhere. It was in Italy actually. And there I knew that there was something going on, you know, but it didn't frighten me. There was nothing frightening, which was interesting, because I hear, you know, I have a lot of colleagues and we talk, and usually people who are not used to anything that they cannot really see, materially speaking, they're fearful, right? It was either like a game or just something that I was privileged to see. That's it, you know, flashes going across the corners of my eyes, and playful, as if they sometimes animals moving, but it was always a swish right past me, you know. And then I came to learn they were, you know, some of them were poltergeists, some of them were ghosts, and you know, things like that. But
I find it interesting that you use the word privilege for that too. Like, that it is such a privilege to be able to see something that other people cannot see.
Well, I'm not sure if I guess I yeah well it is a privilege because you learn, well, let's, it gives you another perspective. Okay. So let's say I'm sitting here in this seat and I have maybe a couple of lights behind me. I see you in front of me and I see that. Mm-hmm. But when I see other things on the sides of me that sort of fill your screen, your outside screen, your life screen, you know, it gives you the impression that there's more kind of life out there. You know, there's something more than what meets the eye, literally, you know? Right. And I like that. I like that. And it's not, it's as if, you know, chasing statues, what do they say? It's chasing rainbows or chasing things that you can't really grab onto. And I like that because it gives me a sense of, it gives me a sense of calm, I have to say. Really calm. And of course, when they're obnoxious, I mean, when you have, you'll know when it becomes obnoxious, when a poltergeist is in your, you'll know right away. I mean, yeah. You start losing your keys and you're just in your sleep, you feel this swishing and you know, you've got to get up. Okay, guys, you know, open all the windows. We're out here, you know, and start clearing things. Yeah.
As bizarre as it is to see ghosts, but like, has any of this led to like any more bizarre supernatural experiences?
Okay. Well, on my YouTube channel, I channel people who have passed. And lately, since the beginning of the year, actually, it's been earthbound souls. Mm-hmm. And the whole phenomenon of earthbound souls is something that I had to learn over the years and what it is. And because I couldn't understand it. And I then found that I had an aunt and I had my mother who had passed earthbound, stuck to me, taking energy, divine energy from me, but mm-hmm. You sense it, you feel it. That business about earthbound souls is a really, really interesting phenomenon. And everyone who asks me, what is it? How does it happen? Well, I'll give you my take. You know, I'm sure other people may have other ideas, but my experience is this, that when a soul passes, let's say they've experienced trauma in their passing, or they were killed, or they were surprised, or they were maybe planning a child's wedding and they were stabbed or something. When something is extremely traumatic for the soul, then they do not pass. They stay in this peri-spiritual place where they can't communicate with us. And that's frustrating for them. They literally don't know that they're dead. And they just roam, you know, they roam, and it's very, very sad for them. And there's a way to ritualize their passing that I do. But a lot of people ask me questions like, oh no, but I want my mom's soul. You know, I'd like to have her close to me, you know, without thinking that it's not appropriate for a soul to be in that space. They have other jobs to do. You know, I mean, they could be guides. They can reincarnate again and have another life experience because the soul, let's say mostly all souls contract their the time they want to go. They literally decide when they want to pass. Okay, I've done everything I have to do. My children are all set up. I, you know, not having any more of a good time, just to make it light of it. But, and then they go and they'll get some form of disease, that incurable disease or something like that, and they'll go. But death is a very touchy subject. Mm-hmm. And every time, I don't know if there's a culture that embraces death wholeheartedly. I'm not sure. In the United States,
I believe it's celebrated quite a bit in many.
There you go.
Like Egyptian culture, for example, back then. Like today, perhaps that maybe like the Chinese culture, like they kind of celebrate mm-hmm. death in a certain way, or even Japanese in their own way.
Yeah. Even if you celebrate it, I mean, I don't know if you've ever had the experience. I can talk a good game, you know, but when it happens to you, when there's a lump on my breast and I have to go and I start praying for my mother, you know, and then it turns out to be some stupid thing. But because you're human and humans are fearful, that's part of being human. And you really never get around that. Of course I'm saying that, but maybe who knows, at 100 years, when I'm ready to go, I can say, okay, everybody, bye. Don't worry. It's okay. I'll leave, you know, with a smile on my face, but who knows? It's a mystery.
Yeah. So we were talking about earthbound spirits, but have you ever channeled like otherworldly spirits, other dimensional spirits, or even like aliens?
It's interesting that you ask because, and we didn't agree on these questions, just to tell your listeners.
Okay, sorry.
there was a psychologist called Dr. John Mack. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've ever heard that name. I've channeled him. He came to me, actually. And he had clients, and he was one of the first and probably the most famous psychologist who started researching the alien phenomenon, because mm-hmm. His patients came mm-hmm. to him and told him all about these abductions. And I have to say that more and more spirits that I channel talk about, I think it's called reptilians, that I have never heard of, and, mm-hmm, these
Pleiadians,
Pleiadians, they're soul group of origins. It's different, but the abductions is a really particular case, and my take on that is that aliens are fallen angels. Fallen. It's a metaphor, of course, but they are angels that came to do a job on Earth, but then were deviated into doing another job. And so basically, I believe that what they do is try to get information about the emotional sphere on Earth, because that's what the human experience is about. The souls come and incarnate to have an emotional experience. And that's why it's so difficult here. Everything is emotional. That's what's so nice about
it. I know we didn't agree on these questions, but I just find it fascinating whenever I speak to like intuitives, that like if they ever get anything, you know, it's almost like a receptor, you know, like when you
antenna.
Yeah. So like if if something crossed your wire, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll let you know. But there's another thing about that. When I do readings with people on soul, because I work as a soul therapist, I like to call it that. And one of the readings, one of the measurements I do is on a scale of 1 to 100, how they receive information. So let's say mine is 100%. I go and get the information. Others mm-hmm. may have, say, 20%. Where they ask the universe for a sign or something like that. And 80%, they have what so many people call downloads. I don't know why they use that word, but information comes to them when they least expect it. You know, washing the dishes, boom, it just came to me. And I find that as being intruding. I like to be able to do what I do during the day without getting others, you know.
Downloads,
yeah. Yeah. But you're asking if I see anything, if I see something whipping behind you, I'll let you know.
Oh, you mean like physically now? Oh, wow.
I thought you meant.
Let me know.
I will, but no.
I did Palo Santo before this conversation too. So, I cleansed.
Oh, good, good. That was the first thing I did, Demi. I check always and I get. Yeah, and that was clean. And as soon as I saw it, I said, oh my God, how clean.
Yeah, I did Palo Santo beforehand for sure. So we'll get into some more like personal stuff here. So like, what's your zodiac sign?
Ooh, I'm an Aries born on April 1st.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And I have an Aries rising.
Oh, okay.
And my moon is in Pisces, thank God.
Balance that out.
And what about you?
I'm a Virgo, Libra rising. Why that?
Well, it's a very interesting combination, you know.
Yeah.
This aesthetic Libra
and Gemini aesthetic. Moon too.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, a lot of air sign, air.
Earth, you know? And air, yeah.
Yeah, earth and air, yeah.
Yeah.
Difficult. Yeah.
Mars is in Aries and my Venus is in Cancer. So I have a good balance, but a little bit crazy.
He would like to think.
Just a little crazy though. Pulled in all directions, you know.
Yeah. I grew up with a sister who was a Virgo and a cousin who was a Virgo. My supervisor at the university for my PhD was a Virgo and drove me crazy because they're very precise people. They're mm-hmm. very precise. And and that's, it's not that I'm not precise, but I just do it. You know, you just do it, yeah. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, they take you back and you have to, no, you have to do it this way. You know,
it's
a gift.
I grew up like I had a little OCD when I was a kid. I had a mild form of Tourette's, I believe. And I have ADD. So I'm like,
I think that might be a disease in the United States. Everybody gives them names for things that probably everybody here has, but they don't give them names. No, I'm only joking in part, but it was diagnosed for you?
It was diagnosed. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. At an early age?
ADD was diagnosed at probably 11. I didn't have a clinical diagnosis for the OCD, but I know for sure I had that because I had very weird counting things. I had to do things like very precisely. I had I had a Tourette's thing where I kind of like had to do this, otherwise the vampires would get me.
And how did you get away from that, the Tourette?
So this is a funny story.
I'm ready. Go.
My grandma.
The grandma. I love it already. The story.
My grandma on my dad's side. She was a very, very interesting person. Let's just say
Tell me more. Tell me more.
I love my grandma. She's just very direct and she's very critical. And so when I would do that and I would do my little like cough thing or I would do the counting thing, she'd say, "Knock that off." No. So eventually I just knocked it off.
Good for her. What's her background? Does she come from a particular ethnic background? Oh,
I mean, I mean, white lady, I believe probably German. I believe Germans on that side of the family. I can't.
I was
really
thinking Russian when you started talking about her, you know, I thought this is a Russian lady.
Yeah. I don't have any Russian in my. Yeah. Let's talk about like psychology here. So you use
You
can talk about archetypal psychology. What is
Okay. Archetypal psychology is when I'll give you a couple of examples. So let's say that I have clients. Okay. First of all, I have two different websites. So one website is a website for my hat as a psychic and medium, and that's with a different name, christellemartinet.com. And there I have those kind of services. And this archetypal, the archetypal readings that I do are there. And then I have another website as an author, which is my name, claudiamonticelli.com. Mm-hmm. Now the archetypal reading I started working with because I started writing this book and it came out of the blue. Let me tell you about I'm not an good advertiser, but I'll show you. It's called Live Like You've Got Superpowers, The Magic of Pleasure Seeking by Claudia Monticelli. And it's more geared toward women. And in every chapter, there is an archetype. For example, goddess on the wall, or the queen with a cause, like a virgin, the four faces of fear that we all have. We all have four faces of fear. And one of them is the inner child. And we have the victim, the saboteur, and the prostitute, male or female. Then we have magic in your veins, the witch in us, in us all. I started it then before. First, I started the readings because I followed Carl Jung's practices and teachings for forever. Then I came across a guy called James Hillman, who was his student, who ended up then being the director of the Carl Jung Institute in Zurich. Now, and he created this archetypal psychology because he felt that archetypes, if I say to you, Demi, boy, you look like a king, you have no doubt about what I'm talking about. You know, if I say, you know, if you say you look like a bag lady, that's an archetype. And then you know what that is, or you look or whatever. He felt that when you work psychologically with someone, if you can pin images onto universal symbols that have such meaning like archetypes, it's easier for a person to interact or to project themselves into something. And the healing, if we could call it healing, is much more immediate because it becomes like a game. Mm-hmm. You put on your witch's cape and then you're able to do, so you can go across the walls. You don the cape of, what could we say? The aristocracy, vermin colored purple of a goddess. And that gives you some different kind of power. And superpowers are real, you know, seeing and visibility and invisibility and how you can be visible and invisible. When I do the archetypal readings for fun, let's say, I can't find it now to give it, you know, to get it out, but I'll just off the top of my head. Let's say that I qualify people with you and Jay, your friends, right? Friends, yep. Companions, whatever. And I give you both, because we all have male and female parts to our nature.
Yeah.
And males very, very often come, and it's a very common in almost 80% of the people I work with. They project in an overall fashion as a king. All right. And again, the female side or the female role is played by a maiden. All right. Now, the maiden and the king have a difficult lifetime together. How I find a couple comes to me, a woman comes to me and said, look, I have this relationship. I can't handle it anymore. It's been 5 years that I've been with this person and it's just not going anywhere. I have to figure out, I've been to so many card readers, but I have to figure out why. So I ask her a couple of questions, her date of birth, that person's date of birth and the full name, things like that. And I psychically get their archetypes. And I use a four different archetype tables, one general overall archetype that they present as on an everyday basis. Another is when they're transgressing or in the bedroom, you know, and another is in the boardroom. And I can't remember the fourth now, but anyway, there are four there. And the couples, one to another, how one of them relate to the other in couples. So what happens with the king? All right, now the king is a person who needs, he needs people to give him what he deserves and what
grovel or
strengthen his emotions. Mm-hmm. He needs emotional strength that is given from others. But the maiden is not in a position to do that for him. What the maiden can do, because she's naive at times, she can be playful and he will have fun with that. And what he likes about the maiden is that she needs protection and he can protect her. But the maiden needs to stand on her own two feet and be responsible for her things. The king doesn't do that to the maiden. He's not able to do that for her. And in the long run, they could have fun together. But what happens inevitably is that the maiden learns to take sides and speak her voice. And that's the end of that relationship, because she overcomes that phase in her life when she needs protection. And he's not giving it to her. That's just it's a very common combination. Those I find even more, if you say to me, Demi, you say to me, look, Claudia, I give me, spread some cards for me. I have to, I don't know, I have a job next week and something's telling me I just shouldn't do it. The man who organizes the gig is just, I just can't see eye to eye with. I can't deal with that. Should I go into it? The money's good, you know, the stakes are high and something will come out of it. Should I go with my gut or should I not? So I look at the cards and the cards will give me some kind of guidance for you, of course. And typically if it's an open situation, if it's if it's good, let's say go in. If I could say, Demi, just don't worry about it. I will typically have some superpower cards, heavy cards like the Major Arcana, and some of the minor arcanas, but I won't get, you know, these Nine of Swords or the Eight of Swords or things like very, very, that will be hindering your progress.
Mm-hmm.
But if I say to you, and it's not always precise as if I would say, okay, give me that person's name. Even just a first name will do. So you say his name is John. Mm-hmm. And I take my archetype reading and I put this again. I look at the executive part. How does Demi figure out in what archetype does he present on an executive plane? And for executive, I don't mean simply working, but how you get things done, how you work, how you move. And the other, whatever his name was, John, I think. And then we see the difficulty. And I tell you, I swear on, and I shouldn't say this, but we Italians say, I swear on the heads of my children. They are 100% on point, always on point. And it surprises me. It is so surprising for me because I thought, my God, isn't that amazing? It is just amazing. And so they're very much fun. They're really very much fun. People today still don't, you know, if I say, I do archetypal readings, what? You know, they won't know exactly what that is. So for example, for the book, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. I know I'm working through the idea of archetypal psychology, but I don't sell the book as a book based on archetypal psychology. You know, they are superpowers. The queen has superpowers. The queen is an executive. She gets, you know, she knows how to manage things. Which I don't know. Cool. You can cut me off now.
I love hearing about this. I mean, I when I first went to college, I studied psychology. So using archetypes as psychology is very fascinating to me.
Yeah, it is. It is fascinating.
And the way James that you Hillman, used it also.
The name is James Hillman, and he is fascinating. He was born in Atlantic City in New Jersey, of all places. And he has always said that being from a very wealthy Jewish family, and he in the hotel business, mm-hmm. and they were into the hotels and the hotelry. And he said that was very, very important for his future life. Mm-hmm. And if you Google James Hillman, there are a lot of books, well, that he has written, but even someone who has written about him, that's just simply fascinating. Simply fascinating. Yeah.
I'm going to write that down, actually.
Yeah. James Hillman, Hillman.
Hillman.
Yeah. He has, I don't know if you read audiobooks or listen to audiobooks.
I do, all the time.
Yeah. Me too. There are a couple of things there as well. He talks about souls. There's something about the soul. I can't remember the title, but that was in his later year. He's a really interesting man. Interesting. Yeah.
So you used archetypal psychology to help you in your tarot readings. Has it ever
In therapy. With people. Couple therapy. I work, it's part of my soul therapy. I have set aside a part for that. Yeah. It's therapeutic. I wouldn't call it a card reading. You know, it's different. Although it's a reading, but it's different. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's a little different. Okay. Got it. Well, what's one of the most interesting things that happened while you were actually channeling something though?
Well, interesting in a way that
without disclosing anybody's like privacy, of course.
I do this live on my channel, probably every week, usually on a Saturday, and but privately with people who come to me as clients. One interesting thing was that a woman couldn't find her son. I think the son was 17 years old, mm-hmm. and he was missing. He had been missing for a week, and no one in the family knew where he was. He had been missing, and it came out that he was in prison, and that opened, you know. And she told me, of course, after the channeling, I think she had channeled her husband who had passed, because she wanted his guidance on where he was. And he pointed to that, you know, and not in so many words, but I had to interpret it as that way. And then she did find him and found all the reason for that. That's one thing that happened. But another thing that happened while I was doing it live is, like you said, you clean your area, Palo Santo, you know. I do the same before. I spray mists of olive oil. Olive oil mist. And during the session, I have the chat room where people ask questions to who I'm channeling. A couple of weeks ago, I did Kurt Cobain. He came to me, actually. I didn't even know who he was. My client, a lot of my subscribers were telling me, come on, you have to, Kurt Cobain, he died in a very strange way. I was a disco queen, you know, I didn't know that kind of music. So it was during another one. I can't remember which soul, but at one point, usually it lasts 45, 50 minutes, the session, because or else my mind fries. At one point, it was exactly 28 minutes because I looked at the clock of my recording and I had this funny feeling. And I said, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have to stop here. There's just a little bit of, there's energy that's blocking what I'm doing and I can't go mm-hmm. any further. So please forgive me. And until we see each other again, until we try, you know, till we mm-hmm. read together again. And that was, and I knew what it was. I mean, there was negative really big time negative energy thwarting me. And I didn't like it because it was coming to me because I get a lot of it, you know, and you have to know how that happens, when it happens, what to do when it happens, you know. And funny things, I mean, I have to say that while I'm channeling, the funny things do happen because the souls are so humorous, so hilarious. Mm-hmm. They'll just, you know, they'll come out with stupid things that they say, you know, but you have to tread very lightly because usually people come to you that are interacting with loved ones who have passed. And they always have their tissues there and everybody cries. But then when the soul tries to lighten it up, then they laugh a little, but you have to be really, really, you have to tread lightly with that because it's a very delicate thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we touched on this in your bio, but what is the Feldenkrais?
Feldenkrais. Okay. Feldenkrais is was a man, an Israeli called Moshe Feldenkrais. And he had a really interesting life, imprisoned, then went here, there, Paris, London, then ended up in the United States. And he invented this method of called awareness through movement, where the person can improve the range of their movement through being aware of every movement that they do. And it sounds simple as I say it, and it smacks of being mindfulness, this, you know, new age word that people throw around. But we work with the skeleton and look at how the hand, as you know, the apes or those who lived before us had to, and their arm had to move in a certain way so they could bring food to their mouth, and they had to do it so their shoulders wouldn't hurt. And the interesting thing about the method, I work with voice. So when you work with your voice, and when I train actors, dubbers, singers to use or find areas of resonance that they have never felt, mm-hmm. it's a matter of filling their diaphragm, of course, with air, but also other parts, the rib cage, the back of the rib cage that nobody ever really knows they have. It's there, but we don't see it. So right. we don't know what it does, you know, and everybody has back pain because of that, because it's not, you don't have any awareness of it. Yeah. And so when I work with the voice, for example, we have a jaw, right? And the jaw is one of the most heaviest bones, I could call it a bone, of our body. Because if you find a skeleton, and you'll see that if it's not closely tied to the head, the jaw will just fall down. And if you could remember when you're traveling in a plane, and when you nod out, your mouth opens because the jaw is so heavy that it opens. And so we have to really use our muscles under our ears to keep it up. And mm-hmm. there are a lot of exercises to do that, but using the tongue as well, using the tip of your tongue to outline the inner parts of your teeth, the arches of the upper and the lower teeth, and the outer parts of the teeth, the upper and the lower. That's just a few of the exercise, but it really entails moving the entire body, being able to understand what your hip bone is doing, but your pelvis bone, because it's based on a couple of very important principles. One is that the hip bone suggests the movement. If you have to go forward, your hip bone has to bend forward. And many people don't know that. I mean, I myself didn't know that. So what I do, or did, used to do, is sort of cave my back in and put my hip forward, that forwards that way, but I had trouble moving. It was not smooth in pushing my body forward. I hope I'm explaining that right.
here's where my mind's going right now.
Go ahead.
While you're actually explaining this to me, I'm becoming aware of those parts of my body.
All right, I'll give you a good one. There's an exercise called, we don't call them exercises, we call them lessons. Mm-hmm. The pelvic clock. So if you're
that one from Pilates.
Yeah, probably. Good. Yeah. You have, it's done on the floor. And you 12, 3, 6, 9, and all of the different other numbers. Mm-hmm. And while you do that, you add a movement from a shoulder or an arm. And it's interesting. But like I said, if you want to move to the left, all you have to do is raise your hip bone, the pelvis, and go there. But there's another thing that's important, is the orientation of the head. Because the hip gives you thrust, drives you, and the head and the eyes, most important, the eyes, gives you orientation. So every time you move, just like a child that's rolling around on the floor, if you turn your head and you go and look behind your back, if your eyes don't go there, you won't be able to even turn your head. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating. I mean, I like I said, you mentioned the Argentine tango. There was a year that I broke two toes on two different feet. And so, you know, the toes, no matter how much you stay still, you get on them and you don't have them heal. And every now and then I had a little pain in one of them. And I went to this Feldenkrais practitioner long ago, and she just, like magic, it's not a massage, because everybody wears, you can do it in a class and you have class lessons. But the other way of using Feldenkrais is called functional integration, which is done on a very low massage table. It's a wide table. It's specific for Feldenkrais practitioners. And it's done with your clothes on. And the practitioner very gently suggests a movement of the scapular. Oh. And it's amazing. So what she did with my toes was literally just with her fingers moved on either side of the toes and moved it ever so slightly. I was falling asleep, really. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel anything ever more after that. And I'm a person who never feels pain. So when I have pain, even if it's in a toe, I have to get rid of it. And it's a magic. It's really like magic. It's amazing. You should probably, because they're in the United States, there are Feldenkrais practitioners all over. And yeah. Look it up.
Well, I studied massage when I was in my early 20s, and I did a little bit of Reiki too on the side too, but I never followed through with it. So I find that becoming aware of like your skeletal system, as this suggests, is really kind of important. And like you said, as you were talking about these parts of your body, I was like, oh wait, that's the back of my rib cage. Oh yeah, that's my hips. And I'm like moving my tongue around.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. You know, the first thing I wanted to do was buy a skeleton, you know, and I just couldn't get a good skeleton that I, you know, so I ended up with a yard. It's 4 feet, 4 feet skeleton. And it's not the same, because it's the jaw doesn't move. And I just call him Todd, but he's okay. He's behind on the chairs in the corner, but it gives me, you know.
Hi, Todd. So your bio says, let me help you find pleasure in your life. How do you define pleasure, and why is it important?
That's what my literary consultant said. You never define cult. You never define pleasure. And I'm thinking, it's like pornography. It's very hard to define it, but you know when you see it that it's pornography, right? well, Well, pleasure, usually people go to the sexual aspect of it. Right. And 99% people think of that. So when I say, you know, let me give you pleasure, they think, oh, hotline, here we go, you know, call me up, bring me up. Yeah. And the thing is that we're living in a society, especially people who are of the millennial age, I have to say, where they think of problem solving, proactive, doing something, to do something, to get something done. And it's all around a chore. Problem solving. Economists talk about negative trends, and very rarely do you see psychologists talk about happiness or joy. And I find that if you work with, because I'm a social linguist, so I work with language. Anything you do has to work with language. And mm-hmm. so it's really important that you know what's coming out of your mouth and what comes out of other people's mouth and how to communicate certain things. And ideologically, if you talk in negatives, nothing positive comes out of that. You're yeah. just overworked, period. That's it. That's it. And if you work, if you go, if you try, this is, I'm simplifying it, of course. If you work with a mindset that moves towards pleasure, let's say I'll use myself as an example. What is pleasure for me? Pleasure for me, I was asked once, if you had 24 hours and no one could see you, what would you do? I said, I'd dance all day. I don't care if anybody saw me, you know, it would be, you had the freedom to just not go pay your bills, not even cook your meals or not clean or anything. And the idea is if you work toward something that's pleasant, you have to work out. You want to get your body in shape. Mm-hmm. Why would I go do something so hard?
Yeah.
Like lifting weights. When I could go do Zumba, or I could, you know, go swimming that I just love. I'm like light as air in the mm-hmm. pool, you know? And so, but that's another kind of an example. But if you're working, let's take it on a work basis. You've studied as a psychologist, let's say, Demi, you studied psychology, and then you use it. Psychology is one of those things that you use everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you never get paid for it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I switched to communications.
but it's one of those things that you know helps you, equips you with a lot of tools to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And so you're in that position. You just got out of college, let's say, and this is probably, I'm making it up, okay? And you're, whoever gave you money to study are really angry because what did you do? It's like studying history or you know, psychology. Why? You can't get a job. And you're in a position of thinking, all right, now what do I do? And I'm sure that you have something that you love to do.
Mm-hmm. Go to the beach.
What would that be? If I said to go to the beach, okay, mm-hmm. go to the beach. All right. So let's say that you could invent a career, a niche on the beach of therapy, you know, 5 tips in one shot. I don't know, you know, get or start word of mouth through people and say, oh, well, that guy's a psychologist. Yeah. He does this, 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 and this. And it could be on the beach where people are relaxed mm-hmm. and, you know, it's not conventional lying on the beach, talking about your issues, but mm-hmm. it has some real meaning, you know, and that could be a new way of exercising that profession, you know, but pleasure begets pleasure. If I do something out of pleasure, I couldn't stand. All right. This is a real truth, but I'm a university professor. I'm fed up with it. Okay. I got fed up with it in 2014. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started opening a channel on YouTube. I opened my company. I want to have fun. Please God, give me fun. And I started and I really did have fun and it brought me so much pleasure and the pleasure worked up into different things that I was enjoying so much. And it came out of something so negative when I almost thought I had to go for, had serious anger issues. I would start screaming at everyone in my university. But then as soon as I started doing something that I really liked, my job at the university changed, you know, magically. because I was seeing things in a different way and I would do things in a different way. Yeah. Yeah. Don't do it because it's not pleasant. You know, it's not, of course we have to pay our bills. We know that, but we have to get things done and we have to do it's life is not a, you know, pleasant all the time, but it can be more pleasant than you're looking at it today. You know,
is that what your podcast is about this, correct?
Yeah. My podcast, I started as a way of making my chapters of the book come to life because I thought I work with the voice. And if I could speak and talk about, you know, the goddess has to go to a party and she has to come. A woman got a phone call from a friend and the friend said, look, I'm having a masquerade party. You're going to be the goddess. Okay. No if, ands, or but, that's what you have to do. And that's the start of the chapter. And she doesn't know how to even get dressed. She doesn't have a role. You know, what is she going to go to Marilyn Monroe from the Hollywood goddess? She doesn't know that, you know, she doesn't side with that. And that's how it starts. So I had to make that come alive and to make it sound good to my voice. That's what I started. That's how I started the podcast.
Yeah.
And so now I'm going to branch off and have guests on and talk about different facets of pleasure.
Yeah. What is, what's the name of that podcast, by the way?
Oh, Pleasure Seeking. Pleasure seeking. Yeah.
Pleasure seeking with Claudia Monticelli, right?
Yes. Pleasure seeking. Yeah.
So what was the moment you realized what you wanted to do in your life?
You mean
you have one of those moments?
Well, yes. I was in college and I was good at languages. Okay. You have these two languages. I was good at French, Spanish, well, you know, you get it. And we had a professor who was really adventuresome and he started a program, it was in the United States. He started a program on translating and interpreting. It was an experimental 2-year program. Mm-hmm. And I did it. And I'm one of the goody two shoes students. I always get good grades, right? Ever since I was little, I couldn't do his interpreting class. I just couldn't do it because he would give us these spot checks and give us a quizzes on the find the capital cities of Francophone countries in Africa. And God, I don't even know. I didn't even look at the map and I'd feel like a fool, you know? So I went to his office one day crying. I only get C's in your class and I don't know how to be. And so he gave me the tissues and he said, no, look, Claudia, I mean, you really have an aptitude for this type of work because of your, you know, background and all of that. You just have to get organized. Mm-hmm. And he gave me, what are the book of facts? What do they used to call those? Something that the farmers used to use. They're huge things, a book of facts anyway, you don't have them anymore. And he says, there you'll find anything you need. And then he said, he told me about his work and he was an interpreter for the State Department. And he said, this, I've been doing it for a while and you know, I'm branching off into other things. And he put the seed in my ears and that's what happened. So before I, you know, then I went on to study, but then I, you know, applied to the State Department and that's how it started. Mm-hmm. But the way it happens with me is I start walking. I go before Aries, double Aries, you know, I don't think that much about it. I just do it. And then I think about it. And so I stumble onto it and see, well, do I like it? Do I not like it? And then keep going. If I don't like it, okay, that's it. You know, and that's how it started. That's how I started with interpreting and with the cards, it was the same thing. Mm-hmm. And with the university, that was an interesting story. I was teaching in other universities, but as an outside contractor. Mm-hmm. And what happened was that we have to typically be supervisors for MA theses. And I was supervising one of my students and on a panel at the Viva, it's called, where they defend the thesis. It was literally some of my colleagues came up and said, well, they were criticizing the poor girls' work so much. And I was trying to defend it, you know. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, I have to say they really shamed me. That was public shame. I didn't do my job. I didn't know what I was doing. And that's when I said, okay, I'm going to go get a PhD. And that's mm-hmm. what I did. I went to Edinburgh in Scotland, and I went to Harriet Watt. I got my PhD, and that was the best thing I have ever done. It's mm-hmm. the best thing it's ever done. It doesn't, I mean, you can, you don't, it's a piece of paper really, but it helps you learn to think and how to study and how to give names to things and how to categorize and look at the world in a different way. And that, I have to do that. That's one of the most, after having my two children, that's the third baby, you know, that's one of the most interesting things I've done for yeah. myself, you know. And a colleague of mine said, you know, Claudia, when you get that PhD, you're going to become part of a small group, of an elite group. And I thought, I was thinking to myself, what is this elite thing? Do they make any money? I was thinking. And she said, yes, you'll find that people are going to come to you for your expertise. And the poor woman, yeah, years after she passed away. And so she was our you know, luminary. And then everyone started coming to me because then I was the next one in line and I had all the answers, you know, and all of a sudden you became the guiding light for people and how to do research, and people, you got invited to be on journals and editing how mm-hmm. all that stuff. And it's something that's never really, some of it is just paid for with a nominal fee, but it's something that you do for the pleasure of seeing, of having research brought up and having people read it, because people
be interested in it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you have to look at something, understand it critically, criticize it, change it in order for you to know that it exists. And interpreting is one of those fields that became in the 50s after, I think it was after the UN really started yeah. With the interpreting, that it was started to be examined with a magnifying glass. And that's when it became a profession, you know, and a discipline in its own right. And so, you know, you'll be being part of something that grows. That's interesting, you know, mm-hmm. that's really interesting. But also another thing that's really interesting, you say, well, how do you know what you want to be? I have trouble to this day with English accents mm-hmm. and with Irish accents. And God forbid that I would say this, with the Scottish accents. So what I did was I became a psychic for a service in the UK. It was like a small mom pop service that mm-hmm. That had their own clientele, and people would call up and you say, and they were very nice. Oh, Claudia, I have Mary on the line and she has booked you for 30 minutes. And that, because I wanted to see if I could learn English a little better to understand, mm-hmm. because I was working as an interpreter. Every time an English person spoke, I would go nuts. It was tragic because I'd have to ask them three or four times. Can you say that again, please? Can you say that again, please? Because there are so many different accents, just like in the United yeah. States. And in the UK, I didn't know all those accents.
All country, many accents, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, and so that was a real eye-opener. It didn't last very long, but it was an eye-opener. And because yeah. you get into your, you put yourself into a constrained place. And you're hiding. I felt like I was hiding, you know, mm-hmm. I was a psychic hiding, trying to learn something else. And that's how I, you know, when I want to learn something, when you asked, how did you know that you wanted to? And I'm moved by learning things. That's yeah. what moves me. Yeah. Yeah. Mostly.
The pursuit all the time. Of knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I don't know why, but that's the way it is.
That's how we evolve.
Demi? What moves you? How did you know what you wanted to do? What were the signs for you?
Oh man. Actually this kind of touches on something you spoke of earlier when you had that hardship, when you were in the university, how it kind of like, propelled you to do something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was at a loss where I was. My grandmother, my best friend passed away. I was going through a really bad breakup. I was moving.
Oh, dear.
My best friends left me. I was like, it was all in one year. Like, But I was just kind of like, man, like I just experienced so much like crap and I don't know what I'm going to do. So basically what I did is I pulled myself up by the bootstraps. Got a job, got my own apartment. Mm-hmm. And I kind of used that apartment as my kind of meditative state to be like, yeah, okay, what do I do now?
Yeah.
And that was my decision to go back to school. Mm-hmm. Study communications because I realized that my breakup melted down because of a lack of communication. Lack of
communication, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then truth be told, I've always been a writer. So it really kind of led me into journalism as well. So
good for you.
Yeah. So it just was a very kind of like easy transition for me. And if that had not happened, I probably would not have started doing that.
Let me ask you something about journalism, because that's not a genre that I have ever written for. I do the mm-hmm. academic writing, essays and things like that for journals mm-hmm. and books. Okay. But for journalism, is it the same as other things? Because people who write, authors, mm-hmm. if it's a novel, fiction, let's say if it's fiction mm-hmm. or even nonfiction, any kind of written genre, let's say that's not journalese, what I find, and even research, is that writing is part of the process of mm-hmm. researching. Does that happen in journalism?
Oh, absolutely. So number one, so from an academic standpoint, you research, you interview, mm-hmm. such as what we're doing right now. Take your notes, you come back to it, you compile, mm-hmm. then you kind of like put it, it's almost like writing an essay also. But it's also has an element of creativity to it because you have to have, you have to have a hook, you have to have a way with your words, you have you have to be kind of poetic, and I'm a poet. So it was very
good for you.
It was very easy. I published 2 books of poetry myself. And so nice. it definitely kind of all kind of melded together. So mm-hmm. it was nonfiction, but creative.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Writing is fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
I'm working on a few pieces coming up pretty soon here, and one of them I have to do a lot of research.
What is, can you give me
I have a blog, it's called Hookup Horror Stories.
Oh wow. And yeah,
I write about sex mostly, so uh-huh. I talk about
sex horror stories.
Yes.
Oh wow.
Hookup horror stories. I jump into like a lot of like different things. Like my last one was about abusive relationships and you know, things that have happened, like interpersonal meltdowns and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, and some of them are kind of funny too. I have some funny ones coming down the way soon, but I also write it's kind of like the opposite of that. So that's personal experiences. I have a deviant's guide to sex, and that is all pretty
deviant's guide to sex.
Mm-hmm. So a sexual,
I'm trying to make it sink in.
Yeah, a deviant's guide to sex.
Yeah, deviant, it would be like transgressing. Yeah, I guess.
So
interesting.
I think the most people, the thing about sex is like, you know, we're kind of taught a homogenized version of it.
Yeah, I like that. Homogenized, I love it.
Just homogenized version of it. Like we don't really understand all the elements that are in there because it's force fed to us. So this is my way of kind of exploring all those facets. And it's, you know, I go into history, I go into like hookup culture, I go into in media, interpersonal communication, stuff like that. So, and then there's a lot more to it as well, but and then I have a whole chapter on kinks and taboos. So,
oh, nice.
So I think that one's going to be a really fun one to write.
Well, you've got your hands full then.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But I do have another one. I can't talk about this one, but this is kind of a favorite one. Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
But it might
leave
be a big
it for
one.
Another show.
It might be a big one. I'm trying to get it published, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I did want us to touch on maybe just a couple more topics here.
Okay. All right.
So we already answered that question about hardship. So, how does the occult came into your life? Like what started your interest in that?
Okay. Well, the fact that I did it and I delve in it and I see things is what brought me there. And, the word itself, the occult, is a little frightening for many people. When you use that in a phrase to describe what you do, people are put off of it. because it's something that is not seen. Okay. Occultare means that it's not seen. Mm-hmm. Obscured, let's say. But what I, that's how I got into it. And I don't think I can get out of it in the sense that that's part of me. That's what I do. I live and breathe between two worlds, and I'm happy to do that. And I'm not fearful of doing it. What really drives me nuts is when I get hit with a psychic attack, you know, negative energy. And so what happens usually is I sprain my ankle, not once, but three times in a row. I bang my head, you know, and those are telltale signs that something is up. Mm-hmm. I get pain, and I never have pain. And so I have to, you know, work on myself and get an energy, my energy woman, where we exchange our own things. But that's how I got into it. And to describe it, I use different words depending on who I'm talking to, because there's sort of an angel culture in many, well, in the United States and in the UK. They always talk of angels and angel cards, and because the tarot cards are a concept that comes from oscurare, you know, the occult culture, whereas angel cards come from a line of long, a little list of fairies, all of those that are very popular in the United States and the UK. And it's just how people like to see the unknown represented, you know. And I choose to use this occult world rather than I can't deal with. I do have angel tarots and a tarot deck of angel cards, but I don't feel them. They're not mine. I have black cat tarot deck, which is so cute and so fun, you know. But
that's I use Aleister Crowley's Thoth deck, so that's
like, oh, that's know. It's an interesting deck. It is an interesting deck.
I love that deck. It's so beautiful, but also it speaks.
I love the runes too. You know, with the runes, they come down like an axe. And the tarot is strong. I mean, the tarot is but you put the runes together with the tarot, and you know, you've got to brace yourself when you
what runes that. Celtic runes?
Yeah, they're Celtic. I only use the Celtic runes. Yeah,
how do you use those?
How do I use them?
I've never explored that, so I really have no idea.
So they're typically
the glyphs. I have one on my finger.
Oh, there you go. That's joy. That's Wunyo, one of the most beautiful. Yeah. They could be inscribed on any kind of material, sort of wood, glass, citrine, all kinds of stones. And what you do is cast them. They're called runes casting. And what you do is you cast them, and you read them just like you would read cards. And there are rune cards, actually, instead of having the stones. But I like the stones because I like the weight, and I like to keep them in a bag, and I like to shake them up. Just like, you know, you're playing, what do you play at the end of the year?
With old the numbers. Sign.
Oh, no, no. Anyway, I like to throw them, and I like to see where they land. And sometimes they you know, turn over, and you have to read them, and you have to read the pairings and knighting sessions, you know, how they relate to each other. And it's interesting because they have a different language that they speak in. And it's not that they give you yes or no. They absolutely tell you, don't do that. This is not the time now. Just don't do that. And you know, I won't go there. Runes are really interesting, and they're beautiful to have in your hands.
I think I might want to explore that a little bit. When I was in London, we actually, my mom and I, we rented a car, and we went to Stonehenge.
Oh, how did you do that? Drive.
You almost died in the process.
I can't. On the opposite side, I couldn't.
We almost died in the process because everything's on a roundabout there.
Yes.
And so
that's worse.
We left that we had the car the entire week that we were there, but we only used it the one day because we were like, this is insane.
But
we left the airport and we went to the one roundabout. She was trying to get on one side and she kept going around and going around and going around. And I'm like, Mom, this is crazy. Can we just like, just go for it? Just go for it. And she finally went, and luckily it's a straight shot from there. So it was literally just that one thing. But being there and being in like near Stonehenge and stuff, like, it's just such a beautiful place and
experience. Yeah.
When I think energy. Of runes, I think of that type of energy.
Yeah. You can find them anywhere really, but it would be nice for a first set of runes to go in a place where you can see them and you can touch them, because they have to call out to you, you know?
Yeah.
I have a beautiful set of jade runes that unfortunately, when you cast them, they chip and they fall and they break. So you have to find something that will, you know, work for you. I like the darker. I have onyx, large onyx ones, and then with white inscriptions engravings that I like.
Beautiful.
Yeah. You got to try that next.
I have one final question for you.
Okay.
All of our guests this.
Okay.
What have you manifested lately?
Well, I wonder how much I could say without compromising myself. I
can't have the NDA yet.
I met a beautiful soul, a gorgeous person, just this week, very, very, haphazardly by chance, because it was just like this, you know, it was in a podcast situation actually. And it was a pre-interview and the title, and I hope he'll be happy about this. It's called Network of Awareness. And so I jumped on awareness. Of course I'm awareness. I'll get the Feldenkrais, the moves, you know? And he gave me his number and I gave him his number. We talked and it started 2 hours one night, 3 hours the other night, in the morning, a couple of hours, then the next day. I swear it's been a week. It's been a week of that. Today it was surprise, right? And you probably know how you are yourself. And I'm not a patient woman.
Yeah.
That is not my forte. I'm
Mars
sorry.
And Aries. No, absolutely not.
No. But, you know, I was talking and he's the opposite. It seems if I could think of somebody who could be an opposite of me, would be somebody like him. But there's something that maybe I knew him in a past life or something, but it's such a nice, pleasant conversation all the time. That is what I manifested lately. Yeah. That's, you know, that's what I could think of off the top of my head.
Well, I love that.
Surprise.
I love that.
Surprise.
That's wonderful. Anything you want to plug before we let you go?
Well, no, I'm not a plugger, but you know, the two websites that I have, you could put them in your description.
I will
and
do that.
And
your book?
My book,
Live Like You've Got Super,
and the podcast, right? You are. And I want to turn the question to you. What have you manifested lately?
Oh man. Well, I've been in talks. Well, okay. So I will say the secret project that I just interviewed yesterday.
Yeah.
I think that had been in the works for a little while, but I feel like that's something that I am kind of uniquely tailored for in a way that I can't really describe, but it's something that I think is really important to my work and what I will be doing in the future.
Ooh.
So I will say that is something that I've manifested lately is kind of a
mystery
unique opportunity.
Man.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Well, I have to be secret about it because it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Of course.
There's a lot
it's
of
not
things
out of the
going
bag
on.
Yeah. We get
but
it.
That and I'm potentially traveling very soon.
Good.
A friend of mine wants to go to Thailand next year. So I mean,
nice.
So
nice.
We'll see. Well, I mean, that's stuff that I've been kind of manifesting in a lovely way.
Yeah. Things are more opening up, you know. I'm able to go back to the States because not being able to travel, it was driving me crazy with this COVID. That's the thing I you know, felt the most.
Yeah, I love traveling and it's been hard.
I know, I do too. It's been really hard.
Claudia, it has been
a pleasure. Demi, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much for inviting me. I had fun.
I had a lovely time with you too. Please come back again sometime.
All right. right. I will. I will. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.
Boom, 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 boom.
Welcome back, Starseeds.
Welcome.
I wanted to thank our guest, Claudia Monticelli, this week.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, thank you. And as always, we like to finish things off with a quote.
We do.
Take off the quote.
And we have a quote today. It is by Kaylin Dion. I love this one. Power is not controlling other people. Power is controlling yourself. Trying to control other people is the first sign that you are entirely out of control. Controlling others is what weak people think power looks like. That is Kaylin Dion.
Bam.
Bam. We also do gratitude
here.
Three things that we are grateful for. I am grateful for this show that I have coming up. I'm so excited and so grateful to be able to play live music, not only to go to live music, but to play live music and hopefully have people there to come to support me. That will be very, very awesome. I am grateful that not getting my way a little bit this week and not getting exactly what I want, that I'm learning tools and how to deal with that instead of looking at it as the worst thing in the world,
mm-hmm.
that I'm looking at what positivity can I get from this, what's really going on, rather than this is just such a bad negative thing. And I'm grateful, even if I never get to go to another one, I'm grateful that I got to go to some pool parties this summer and wear some cute little shorts.
Yeah.
I mean, some cute little swim trunks.
I'm grateful for booty shorts too.
Booty, 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 booty over there.
I mean,
that's
right. Oh. I'm grateful for my new friend that I met this week. I learned some new things and we had a really good time. I'm grateful for hanging out with my mom last weekend. It's a little bit of a cop-out, but we had a little moment where we discussed like some stuff and we were just like really thankful for each other during that time too. So and then, I'm also thankful. I guess I'm going back to work. So I'm grateful to go back to my job, my last job.
Work.
My not the one I quit, the one I have pre-pandemic back to the restaurant. So I'm grateful to going back to work tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Anyways, this has been a wonderful show. Hope you guys can follow us on social media at A Cosmic Journey Pod on Instagram, at A Cosmic Journey Pod on Twitter, because we couldn't afford the EY.
Yeah.
I'm at Dimitri Wild on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
And I am a J Maceo Music on all of those. I forgot to say, also, please, 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 I'd love for you guys to follow me on Spotify.
Yes.
I am J Maceo, J.Maceo, J Maceo on Spotify. So I'd love to get some followers from this show.
I also put that in the show notes every week, so you can always just check our show notes.
Show notes.
Join our Facebook group, Starseed Central, where you can share memes, suggest cosmic news articles, or interact with us directly. It's on YouTube as well. So We have our cosmic news interview videos and Jay's Cosmic Insights in video format there as well.
Can you rate, share, subscribe that? If you do that, we would be very, very grateful. We're grateful. Anyhow, you just heard that. But if you rate, share, subscribe, we'd be grateful. And we have a giveaway?
I mean, we're still doing that. Yeah, sure. Why not? If you leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts and screenshot it, send it to us, we can send you a free gift. So, I mean, we have these little stickers that we're giving out to people too.
We do. I was going to pick one up, but they're not within arm's reach.
No, we're not. I still have them at home.
That reminds me of, I know we're signing off here, but that reminds me of a Mitch Hedberg joke. He's like, you know, sometimes I sit in my hotel room and I write jokes, but if the pen is too far, I just have to convince myself that what I thought of ain't funny. He was such a genius. But yeah.
So anyways, thanks for listening, you guys. And as always,
Godspeed, Starseeds.